You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
The time has come.
I like that.
The time is now for Victoria Stilwell's Positively Podcast. She's a world-renowned dog trainer.
Seen enough dogs today, have you?
She's the host of It's Me or the Dog.
I'm coming to train you.
Along with co-host Holly Fervor.
You don't play around with that name, do you?
I am a fan of Shwethi Balls.
She's Victoria Stilwell, and she's ready to go.
This is a lovely way to start the day.
You get the busy bee. I need to trim my whiskers.
I see some poo here.
I feel a little bit better now, because I'm the only one who usually feels stupid during the podcast.
Now, let's head to the studio and get this Positively Podcast started.
Admiring that book.
I am. I'm so excited because we've got Dr. Paula Bloom here in the studio with us today, who is the author, along with Dr. Reef Karim, of Why Does He Do That? Why Does She Do That?
Hello.
Hi,
I've missed
Paula.
You.
Welcome.
It's been so long. Hello.
I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you.
Yeah, we've missed you too. And you gave me a copy of your book, which I'm looking through.
Did she sign it?
She did sign it. And she did a peace sign and a heart, Paula Bloom. but you know what? It really, and I love the book, but it makes me feel really old.
Why is that?
Because it's talking about things that I don't think that I have done or in 20 years. And it just makes me feel old.
Like
I mean,
what?
I haven't dated in... How long have I been married? 15 years?
So it's a good thing that you weren't saying I haven't dated in 5 years. You've been married 15, so
no,
that's
I've
good,
been,
right?
Look, I've been married, I've known him for 15 years, I've been married for 13 years. So I'm a little bit long
Dang.
In the tooth for this book, but there's some fabulous things in
You're
it.
You're old. Hey.
I am old.
Yeah. I've been married for 6 years. I'm a spring chicken. I remember what it was like.
Late.
Yeah, I know. But I remember what it's like to date because I did a lot of that. And let me tell you, you ain't missing nothing, sister.
Oh, that's
I mean, it
awful.
Was fun when you're in your 20s because you don't care. In your 30s, it becomes a little bit of a, don't you think? Why are you looking at me like
bit.
I'm crazy? How long have you been married, Paula?
I've been married, well, it depends. It depends
what
who you
What do you mean
ask?
It depends?
Because, well.
Was there a marriage date, an actual
Well, because
ceremony?
We got married legally at the courthouse December 18th.
What year?
2000. Then
you
our
sure?
Jewish, yes. And then our Jewish wedding, like our big party wedding, was in September of 2001.
So it's 2000.
It just has implications. We say 2000 because of the math when you start thinking about when our daughter was born. That's the only time it becomes really relevant.
Yeah, but you were technically married
exactly,
in 2000.
Exactly, exactly. So that was a really fun conversation.
So in other words, that was 13 years ago.
Exactly. I've been married 80 years and my daughter is 12. Uh-huh.
But see here, so you guys are all laughing at me about dating, and I've been the one who's dated most recently.
Yes.
Did that
that's
sound
true.
Right? So
just we got a lot to tell Sean. But no,
oh,
but,
he knows.
But what was it, it's just a really great book. So if you are of dating age, doesn't matter. I mean, that really is, could be any age. You've got to get this book.
Aww.
Why Does He Do That? Why Does She Do That? Dr. Paula Bloom and Dr. Reef Karim.
Sean always says to me, is there ever going to be a time when we go out and meet someone and you don't start your sentence with, oh, I want you to meet this guy that I used to date?
Well, it's been really
I got
interesting.
Married old.
Yeah, exactly. Well, no, you're not old, like you said, you
well,
know, spring chicken.
Dog ears.
I mean, I just turned 40. Remember my whole existential
That's
crisis?
Right.
I just turned 40. Well, just, it was several months ago, but you know, just turned 40. And my eyes, the day after, I needed reading glasses.
Really?
Isn't that crazy? It just happens really, really fast.
Like overnight like that?
Like overnight. And my doctor said, oh yeah, that's what happens as you get older. Thank you. Thank
I know
you
a lot
much.
Of stuff happens as you get older.
What's been interesting, though, is I had an email. Yeah. I got this email from somebody in their 60s who said, where was this book when I was younger? It was really interesting.
Oh.
Unfortunately, though, she said that it threw her back into therapy, the book, because at the beginning, I'm like, oh, no, that wasn't the intention. Because we talk a lot about, in the beginning, before you even date, what you need to know about yourself and looking at your patterns and your history.
But you know what, though? I think there's another market for this book. I think, because think about it, for the, what is it, the golden years? What is that generation? The baby boomers.
The baby boomers.
Because a lot of them are becoming widowed and they're getting back into the dating scene. I mean, unfortunately, we've seen a rise of STDs in the elder population because of that, because they're getting out there and dating again. So this could, you have another market there for this book.
You
do.
Well,
thank you.
So for everybody of you who, anybody's dating. Hello. For everybody who doesn't know who Dr. Paula Bloom is, she's a clinical psychologist, has appeared on Nancy Grace, CNN, CNN International, CNN Espanol, Dr. Sanjay Gupta's show. She's great CNN.
Do you know?
In fact, we're all CNN.
That's right.
I know, I've been on CNN too, but not as much as you guys.
Do you know that she's fluent in Spanish?
Yes.
Sí, es verdad. Eso fue mi primer idioma. Yep.
Mm-hmm. That's her first language, Spanish.
Oh, my God. I didn't know you spoke Spanish.
Yes,
you just
did.
Translated exactly what I said.
That's because I listened to you. I speak Spanish.
You do speak Spanish?
Uh-huh.
Oh,
para necesito hablar más despacio, por favor.
Necesito hablar más despacio. Can you speak Spanish with your English accent?
No, I can't. I can speak a little bit of Italian.
Oh, can we hear that?
It's very close.
Sono Vittoria. Mia mamma ha una casa vicina Toscana.
A house in Tuscany?
Sì. Sí.
It's very close to Spanish.
Vicina de Luca. Basically, when I was young. When I was young, I can't.
Dangerously close to the dating
really subject. When I was young and I dated a few Italian boys, I spent all my summers there. So, of course, we had a little house in a little village up in the mountains, and none of the kids spoke English. So I had to learn Italian. And so I learned Italian by speaking with the kids there.
Oh.
And gradually over the 15 years I was there, I sort of assimilated it just a little bit. I'm pretty
bad. So you could pick up Spanish. Like when you say, how do you say in Spanish, it's come si dice, but in Italian, it's come si dice.
Come si dice, yeah.
So it's very similar.
Mm-hmm. Very similar.
It is.
I know very little of a lot of languages, just kind of like real life. I know very little about a lot of things.
Well, talking about different places, I'm going to move swiftly on to something else that has kind of caught my attention the last couple of days, is in England. My motherland, the motherland, is Morrison's Christmas 2012 Alternative Christmas Puddings television.
Okay, please translate. I'm sorry, what the? To me, Morrison's is a cafeteria from when I was a child.
Morrison's,
do you remember that?
Yes, Morrison's is a grocery store or a big supermarket chain in Britain. And they have just released a commercial about Christmas and showing a little boy giving his Christmas pudding to the dog because he doesn't like it.
Okay, we play what a Christmas pudding is.
You mean like a snack pack? Like you know that chocolate thing you put the
Christmas pudding grossest invention ever.
Is it really pudding like our pudding?
It is
in the
this
States?
Thick, black, raisin-filled, disgusting cake.
What makes it black? Is it like a pudding? Or
I don't
is it
know. Somebody.
Like a,
I don't know what made it. Just it's I don't know.
Really? Let me ask you a question. If it was made without the raisins, would it be tasty or no?
No, because it's got fruits and it's got this funny, weird taste. Anyway, I'm sure I'm offending a lot of people who like Christmas pudding, but I used to hate Christmas pudding so much. My grandmother made me jelly or Jell-O.
Jell-O,
she made me Jell-O
because I think of like
dessert on Christmas.
Because I think, and I know this is going to sound bad, but those in England understand spotted dick. That's what it sounds like.
No, spotted
to me.
Dick is different. Spotted dick is more
like. I like that. That's delicious.
Yeah, that's
like
more
custard.
Like a bread puddingy custard with raisins in it. Yes. No, this is.
Oh,
this
raisins.
Is,
raisins.
I know.
Can I,
and raisins obviously
can
are
I tell you my psychological raisin thing really quickly?
Okay,
I have this whole raisin thing, which is I saw this sign that said, oatmeal raisin cookies are the reason I have trust issues. And I have to tell you, because like, they look like a chocolate chip cookie, but they're not. And if you go to a party and, you know, they always have the peanut butter cookie, the sugar cookie, and so this is what occurred to me when I saw that sign is that I should stand around oatmeal raisin cookies and give out my card. I'm a psychologist because
like
if it brings up my trust issues, it probably brings up other people's. What
it
do you
does,
think, Victoria?
It
this
does,
raisin
it
thing.
It does mine.
I think raisins are like lethal or something. I don't know. I don't
it
like raisins.
It does mine. I go to Subway sometimes and you have the cookie counter where you pay your money. And I always look at the cookie counter and always the chocolate chip cookies have gone. And the only cookies that are left are the darn oatmeal raisin ones. Gross. Who wants to eat that? I want the chocolate
some
chip
oatmeal,
cookies.
If you don't like raisins, that's an issue. Mm. But some oatmeal cookies are good. I'll tell you what. Here's the deal. Next time, Polly, you come to a podcast, my mom used to make this oatmeal cookie. It was almost like a candy, and it's really, oh, trust me, it's delicious.
Is it?
And my mom would say, I'm going to make cookies. What kind do you want? We didn't say chocolate chip. We said oatmeal, but it's her special oatmeal.
Would she put chocolate chips in it instead of raisins? No.
Just oatmeal. So can I show you this mm-hmm. advert? All right. So we've got, look, just take a look at it.
It sounds nice.
Here's the little boy.
Everyone loves traditional Christmas pud. So Morrison's have a cherry chocolate gâteau, an exclusive white Christmas pudding, and a sparkly snow-capped baked Alaska. And they're all £5 each or less.
Lovely. Right, lovely. So, doesn't look a big deal, does it?
And the funny thing is people are thinking, £5, it's a very heavy pudding. £5 is money.
It doesn't look like a big deal, but the fact is the kid just gave the dog Christmas pudding because he didn't like it. I understand what the kid was doing. Who does like it? Dog takes the Christmas pudding. He don't want to even eat the Christmas pudding either. Puts it on a plant, and then the plant wilts and dies because Christmas pudding's so gross. You shouldn't be giving Christmas pudding. That's what everybody is up in arms about. There's a Facebook page now where people who were so angry with this advert saying, you mustn't give things like Christmas pudding to your dog because raisins are dangerous. And
good to know.
I knew there was something with raisins.
Numerous dogs have been killed by raisins. All of these stories are coming out now of people who've lost their dogs because their dogs ingested raisins or grapes. So I think the message here is, you got to be careful all year, but please, when you're having people coming around to your house and you're celebrating in the holiday season, be really careful about what your dog picks up.
Well, especially when you have all these people around, little kids, they drop food on the floor, or people will just come in and they think they're being sweet, and they go, oh, here, and they feed the dog.
But what is it with these advertising executives? They just don't know. They're not educated, or they seriously think it's not a big deal.
I think they probably didn't know, and they thought, this is funny because it's been a longstanding joke, and I'm sure they just weren't aware of it. They weren't aware that there was raisins in there, but responsibly they should do something or say something. I looked up on the other poisonous. There's a lot of poisonous and things that aren't good, but some of these things I was a little shocked at, like onions and garlic.
Yeah.
Didn't know you shouldn't have that.
Well, onions, absolutely. And they cause hemolytic anemia, which is basically your
blood.
Yeah, a blood in. No, it's not an infection.
Like a blood poisoning.
But it is. And
it's theosulfate is the toxic ingredient. Mushrooms? Now, who knew mushrooms? I was surprised that, you know, the issue was mushrooms. Had no idea, but apparently mushrooms can cause all kinds of problems, coma, death in a dog.
So it can avocado.
Macadamia nuts.
Look, a lot of people give their dogs garlic, and because garlic is supposed to be sort of an alternative mm-hmm. therapy for getting rid of fleas, and a natural remedy for getting rid of fleas in your dog. And I used to put a tiny little bit of garlic on dogs' food, especially dogs that were suffering from anorexia, not the human form of anorexia, but just anorexia, mm-hmm. the medical definition of the word, which is just not eating. And that would really entice these dogs to eat. But garlic is a little better, but still...
You could give too much.
You could give too much, and your dog could suffer because of it. So you just got to be really careful about what kind of plants are in your home, too. And
but like fat trimmings, it says, can cause pancreatitis.
Yeah.
So obviously you don't think about that. You know, here's a little bit of chicken or turkey or ham left over, but if it's a really fatty piece... And they don't digest like we do they? They're small.
Well, yeah. And also, look, things like avocados, which has got a substance called persin in them. It's harmless for humans who aren't allergic to it, but large amounts might be toxic for dogs. So you got to be careful of avocados. Alcohol, of course. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of alcohol in Christmas pudding.
I was going to ask you, is there alcohol in that pudding?
Well, even like I know with cats, you know, you say, oh, give cats tuna or you give cat tuna. My vet told me tuna can cause systolic of the liver and the kidney, systolic of the kidneys. and milk. You know, you think, oh, cats eat milk,
yeah,
drink milk.
A lot of cats are lactose intolerant.
Right, and dogs as well. Mm-hmm. They can't break it down like we can.
Coffee, tea, other caffeines,
oh.
Grapes and raisins.
We know chocolate, pure chocolate, cocoa powder.
Yep. Milk and other dairy products. Here we mm-hmm. go. Macadamia nuts, candy and gum. It causes an increase in insulin circulating through your dog's body.
I'm sorry. I just, you know, sometimes you think funny
chocolate.
Thoughts.
What?
I know this is terrible. When Cashmere was my nightmare dog before she met you and we took a trip to It's Me or the Dog, I remember her being outside and she's on my back deck. I look at her and she's chomping, but she's not chewing like a normal person. She's chomping away. And I look, I'm like, what is that she's eating? And I thought, you know, is that a treat? What, for the love? And so I finally opened her mouth after about watching her for 2 minutes and she was chewing gum. Apparently somebody spit out the gum. You know, someone outside had spit out the gum and she picked it up. It must have had a scent of mint or something on it. But she, honest to God, was just sitting there chewing it. She didn't swallow it, but she was chewing it like a human being. Sorry. So when you said gum, that's what came up.
Yeah. The gum as well. What is, how do you pronounce it? Zictal, whatever. That's the substance in gum that is very, very poisonous. Xylitol.
Xylitol.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
Usually that's sugar free, right? Xylitol is a sugar substitute.
So all of these kind of things. And you know, poinsettias, Easter lilies, if you have them at Christmas.
But good to know for the next holiday coming up.
Right. Yeah.
But that's, you know, it's good because I know a lot of people, you know, they come in and they don't ask, can I feed your dog? You know, don't feed my dog anything that, you know.
Right. And if you're really feeding your kids Christmas pudding and you have a dog there or you've got your nieces and nephews or other little kids around, know that that Christmas pudding is going to end up under the table, right. Potentially in the dog's mouth.
So don't let him do it.
Okay. And Morrison's, maybe do your research next time.
Right. Something like that. Anyway. Okay, now we're shifting topics since we're talking about holidays. And I've, when I did a radio show here in Atlanta, this is a topic I brought up before. And I want to preface this with, I love my friends and family. I love you to pieces. And you're very special, and I'm so glad you're in my life. But really, you know, I love seeing pictures of the family. If you want to send me a holiday card with pictures of the kids or whatever is important in your life, fine, that's great. I would love to see my friends Linda and Jim, the funniest thing ever. We all were good friends with them. I mean, they had a nightmare issue with their house. They had, their attic was rotting and molded, excuse me, and they had to dig it out themselves, and they did this forever. And so their Christmas card picture was the two of them looking like, you know, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, with like on the, and that's fine, I totally get it. But if you have to write me a dissertation and tell me, in January, little Timmy cut a tooth. In February, little Janie was third in her spelling bee in third grade, and we took her to Stevie B's Pizza after to celebrate. Like, here's the deal. If I didn't know that, because then we're not that good enough friends.
No, but right. Also, but it's written in the third person, a lot right. of these letters are.
And it's generic. There's
Victoria,
no signature.
Victoria had a great year, she did. And I wrote it, and I'm writing as in, Victoria had a great year, she did eHow Pet. She, what is that?
But here's what I'm thinking.
Totally never happens in the UK. It was completely sort of a shock when I first came over here to read.
All right, let's ask our resident psychologist. Why do people do this?
You know, it's interesting. I actually think, though, that this is probably, and I haven't looked at the data, this is anecdotal, because I haven't gotten one of those in a few years from anyone, is that I'm wondering if now with social media and Facebook and all of that, people are kind of keeping people posted during the year. So I'm wondering if maybe we won't be having the luxury and the privilege of receiving those Christmas letters from people. I don't know. I just, it's tough because on one hand, everyone's really busy. And when you got that letter before social media, it was a way to kind of feel connected to people because you weren't having contact and everyone's busy and, you know, it's hard to pick up the phone and call. Now, I have kids and I really like them pretty
you
much.
Like your kids?
But I don't feel the need to share every detail of what's going on with them. I don't know. We're friends on Facebook. Do I overshare on Facebook,
no.
do you think?
Uh-uh.
No? Okay. I mean, my kids ride unicycles. I think that's cool. I periodically will talk about that. But I really don't think people care that my daughter won the spelling bee, which she didn't because she's really, I mean, anyway, she's great. She's a really good student. Spelling isn't her thing. We'll just stay with that. But I don't know. Like, I also think that at times it's like people find their own life more interesting than others might.
Yeah, like
there's a sense of what is interesting to me about my life. I make an assumption that it'll be interesting to you.
Is it like this podcast? What's interesting to us is interesting to nobody else.
Hit the nail
I'm
on
sorry,
the head.
But I think that Christmas pudding is riveting. No, but you know what I mean? It's like, I mean, we all like to, I mean, I listen, I don't know about you guys, but I love driving down like nice neighborhoods and seeing how people live, looking in the windows. Do you do that?
No, at night when all the lights are on and it's dark all the time.
I love it. So I think there's a little bit of that having a window into someone's life, and I enjoy that.
It's just kind of creepy.
And I guess, I don't know. I mean, listen, what I tell people, you know, you're special just like everybody else, you know, it's like, you know, and I don't know. But then there's another thing too, which is some of us feel like we don't exist. Maybe I'm getting into a little bit of a woo-woo thing. I'm in a little weird place. We don't exist unless we're being perceived, right? It's like this tree in a forest thing. Like if nobody hears what's going on with me, did it actually happen? That's a whole nother thing. We could talk about Instagram and Facebook and everything like that. But it isn't, I'm just wondering if it's going to happen less and less now that people, you know, the idea of like losing touch with someone is going to be obsolete. You know,
because
I don't know.
Because
you can't. I mean, are you going to, you know, are they going to still say that in yearbooks? Like stay in touch. I mean, if you have right. Facebook and that lasts, let's say, forever, and yeah, you move different houses, but even your phone number stays the same. You can keep your cell phone no matter where you go. Losing touch with people, is that going to be like a, I mean, I don't know. I feel ambivalent about that.
So you can no longer be a hermit, and gone are the days of anonymity. Right. Well, in a certain way.
Right. Right. Well, I don't know. It's interesting. Why do you think it's an American thing? Like, do
well, because
people,
it doesn't happen in Britain.
What, I've
never,
not like
my mother
other?
Never ever, I mean, we never ever received cards, and she receives a lot of them.
Right, no right. holiday cards?
Yeah, you know, holiday cards.
No letters.
Yes,
no holiday
no
letters.
Oh, yeah. And certainly no pictures of family. So when you send cards in Britain, you send them with a nice Christmas picture on it. You don't send them a picture of your family. Mm. Now, I remember, and my mother's very old school, okay? I remember her receiving a Christmas card. This was about 10 years ago from, I think it was one of her cousins and all of his family. And it was a picture of all of them. They had summered somewhere. And she was aghast that they had the audacity to send a Christmas card with their picture on it.
Because it's arrogant? Because it's self-centered?
Yes.
Because it's ego?
Are you kidding? Yes, that's how it's perceived. That's how she perceives.
Too self-referential.
When you send a
like,
Christmas card,
you
write a little bit inside, you have a nice picture of a Christmas tree on the front, and not a picture of your family. So then, when I came and lived here, I started sending her Christmas cards of my family. And I do remember after we actually got married, Van and I, his mum, who never sends Christmas cards to anybody, the year of our wedding, that December, we got married in May. That December, she thought, well, this year I am going to send Christmas cards, and I'm going to put a picture of the immediate family, me in my wedding dress, and the immediate family at my wedding, which was her and her husband, and her daughter and her son-in-law and her son and me, not my mum and dad.
Oh.
So then when my mother and father, who was alive at that time, and my grandmother received the picture of the wedding, the Christmas card, oh my gosh, there was explosions, phone calls back and forth between my mother and grandmother. Did you see the Christmas card? How dare she not include us on it?
But
so you see, it came around full circle. Now she was pissed off because she wasn't on the freaking Christmas card.
But I could tell you though, technically, I could see she's sending it to her friends and family. So technically, they don't know you. And even though they're, you know,
they don't know. Of course, they know me.
Yeah.
That's why they don't know my mom and dad. They don't know how to put my mom and dad and sister on it. So they chose the picture without them on it.
Isn't it interesting how the judgment turns?
Didn't
I would never send a picture with myself.
Exactly.
I can't believe I wasn't on that card.
Exactly.
Well, here's
a little bit of a window into my life.
So I'm going to tell you, though, next year, be watching your mailbox, because I am going to write a Christmas letter, and it's going to be all about me. And just wait. So next year at this time on this podcast, one of you two is going to read my Christmas letter aloud. Let it be known. I'm on it.
That's so awesome.
I have to say, though, you do so many cool things. I actually think it would be interesting. You haven't been in a spelling bee lately, though, have you?
No, but it's not going to be, trust me, it's not going to be. I hosted an event to save children or dogs. It's not going to be. It's going to be, let me tell you about my trip to Big Lots in January.
Right.
In January, Holly went to Big Lots.
Right. And I'm talking
and
about
she
big.
Was going to, yeah.
Mine's
going to
be, and I just had to go up a size in my jeans because, you know, yeah, that's what I've done this year. Yeah.
Exactly. So I'm going to formulate, I'm going to take notes every month about what to put in my year end letter.
Oh,
and,
I can't wait.
Also, Paula, can you help me with this one? Always at Christmas time, we have this big deal of people getting pets or puppies or kittens and giving them as gifts to families, friends, boyfriends, girlfriends, husbands, wives, and giving them as gifts, just like a little present wrapped up, you know. And then, of course, January, February comes along. The little gift has now become a pain and there's toileting everywhere and has to be given up. And then the shelters become overrun. I mean, it just happens every single year. And the Dogs Trust, which is a big rescue organization in Britain, came up with a tagline, a dog is for life, not just for Christmas.
Mm.
Why is this? Obviously, yes, because it's a time of giving. But why do people feel the need, even though they now know, they know, most people know that it's not a cool idea to give an animal as a gift for Christmas. Why do people still do it?
Because, I mean, again, of course it's not a good idea, but people, I mean, what's cuter than a puppy with like a red bow on it? I mean, it's adorable. It's something that, you know, you people know the dogs bring such happiness and joy. I don't think they're thinking about the implications of it. Just like the person often who says they want, I mean, how many people want an animal, buy it for themselves or rescue it themselves and then don't realize how much work it is, you know? There's this vision of sort of the idealized vision, and then there's what really happens, right? It's a and there's a big discrepancy, right, between the adorableness and the work. I mean, it's like parenting. You see these babies that are adorable, and then you think about their smells and their diapers and their feeding, and, you know, we think about the ideal and the positive aspects, but we forget about all the parts that are mundane and the ones that really take up much more time. And because you want to give a, I mean, what does that look like to give a child a puppy? I mean, how amazing, right, to have that go. But, oh, boy. I do find it fascinating, though, that somebody would give somebody else an animal. I mean, it's like, I mean, I wouldn't even buy perfume for somebody else because it's such a personal thing. You know what I mean? To give an animal to someone, I find that, I don't know.
So
I know
it happens all the thinking, time. But please, if you all are thinking, even if you're getting a dog from a rescue shelter, please don't give it. Don't give an animal as a gift for Christmas or for any holiday that you're celebrating. Please, please, please.
Well, you mentioned, yeah, like they don't think it through. It's kind of like marriage. You think, oh, this is great and dating is great and your hormones are great and this is wonderful. Yes, I'll marry you. And 3 years later, you're like looking over at the lazy boy couch and the guy who's got crumbs on his, you know, on his shirt and watching the Falcons play. Yes, right. I'm describing my husband. And
yes, describing my husband.
What have I just done?
Right. And
I wasn't
toileting
thinking
issues
it through. So I guess it kind of crosses over to everything, but no, it's a really good point.
It is a really good point. I didn't realize. I mean, I guess I hadn't thought about it, Victoria, how often that happens. I mean,
it does, and it's so, you know, working in rescue, it's so sad to see all of these dogs coming in, and the rescues brace themselves for it because they know that that's what's going to happen. So please, everybody, a dog is for life, not just for Christmas.
And a cat.
Any animal.
Or Hanukkah.
Or
Hanukkah.
Kwanzaa. It's a big deal, though, you know, like around Easter, too. Think about it. Everybody gets a bunny around Easter. I'll never forget a friend of mine got her kids. Oh, I'm getting them each their own rabbit. And I was like, oh, really? Because you can't even take care of fish. And, of course, what happened? They had to rehome those rabbits. Thank goodness they found someone to take them. But it's the same thing. Oh, it's cute. It's perfect. It's Easter. It's a rabbit. Isn't that funny? Ha ha. Peter Cottontail. And you know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah, I just get the Cadbury mini eggs, the chocolate, the one that the
that's right.
You know, the one that Bunny like lays
much
an egg.
Much more humane.
Uh huh.
We gave my daughter talk about Easter gift. We gave my daughter the Easter bunny. Gave my daughter a little kind of walking bunny that poops eggs.
Oh,
it's a little plastic bunny that walks along, and as it walks along, out of its bottom comes little egg candies.
Oh, candies. That's a different story.
Oh, yeah. No, that's poop.
I was sitting here thinking, like, I didn't realize that bunnies, I mean, I thought they did live births. I didn't realize that they laid
pooping.
Eggs.
No, I'm sorry.
No, but it's a Cadbury. It's a Cadbury bunny, you know,
it's
the Cadbury, yeah.
Now she's going to be confused in biology class when they say, you know, how do these animals reproduce, you know? Oh, yeah, they lay eggs. I just had an egg this morning.
So she's all messed up in the head. We know a good therapist we can send her to. Like, I don't understand.
I'm always glad when Paula comes in here because,
We talk nothing about dogs.
No, we don't.
Or cats.
But we learn a lot about ourselves.
So here's a question for you. Now that we have her here, I think we ought to discuss something since we've totally taken a left turn from animals. So I just have to tell you, I don't think Paula knows this. So I get a text from Vic earlier today. What time are you and Paula coming? And I said, and she said, because, and I said, or wait, I think I might even still have it. What time are you coming? Because Van thinks one time and I think another. And I said, 4:30. And I said, who wins? And she texts back, I do.
Not that we're keeping score.
And, he just swore then.
So anyway, so why is it that we always, like, it's, you know, the let's talk about competition. And I think it sort of ties into the holidays as we're talking about gifting somebody for an animal. Like, everyone wants to do the best. I got you the best gift. I got you you're going to be the most memorable. Things like that. We always are trying to win. I'm the most competitive of all I know. My husband's very competitive.
Terrible. Don't play a game with her.
Oh my gosh. I'm very focused. But, you know, what is it, especially around this time of year when we all sort of, you know, it's supposed to be the season of loving and giving and charity. And it turns out to be, you know, almost this like craze of, I have to be the best, you know, even throwing holiday parties or, you know, gatherings or cooking, whatever it is.
You know, I really think that a lot of this is kind of uniquely American. I don't know if it's different in England, but this idea of for me to feel good, I have to be better than somebody else, somehow as if those things are related. Right?
Oh, it's the same in England.
It's the same. Okay. Mm-hmm.
It's human nature,
and
right?
But this idea, like, that, you know, I see it a lot with kids, with parents, like, their kid has to be the best at everything. Listen, I don't walk around upset that I'm not a professional football player because I don't think that I should be good at that. But there are a lot of people who think they should be good at everything. They think their kid should be good at everything. They think they should play every sport, play every instrument. You know what I mean? Like, and just people who think they should be the perfect hostess, they should give the perfect gift. You know, I think just in general, perfectionism, which is kind of what we're talking about, is an oppressive force in our lives. Mm-hmm. I don't know whatever happened to just being good enough. Why isn't good enough good enough? You know?
Right.
But I do think the competition thing, I mean, I'm thinking about, you know, home for the holidays, hanging out with family. Oh, I don't know, sibling rivalry. I think it may start there, possibly. Yeah. Not to sound like a shrink who thinks it's about your childhood, but I used to think it was everybody's mother's fault. But now that I'm a mom, I'm convinced Freud was wrong. It's all daddy issues.
Yeah.
But this idea, though, of for me to feel good, I need to feel better than you. And it's really sad to me.
Or perceived better than
you. Perceived better. And this show that we put on, I mean, this false sense of self that we put out there, this pressure we put on ourselves, it really robs us of the joy of being present. I mean, when I had some people over for dinner last week, and I try to cook everything. I try to cook everything ahead of time. I try not to do anything last minute. Because I
was just
be
thinking,
present.
We didn't get our invite for that, but I'm sure it was lost.
Sorry.
Okay.
It was lost in the mail.
It was a long time ago, you know. Mm-hmm. But I remember I was sitting there thinking to myself, like, this has to be good and this has to be good and the table and, oh my God, my kids, you know, I can't believe I was going to have them help me with the table. Then I was like, no, because then they won't be symmetrical. And I'm like, what was this about again? Oh yeah, the miracle of Hanukkah. You know, you know, and it's just so easy to get lost in it. And a lot of times, part of what happens is that we, especially during the holidays, we stop doing the stuff that anchors us because we get out, you know, we're going to all these parties. So we stop eating well, we stop exercising, we stop having time to ourselves and we get really ungrounded, which makes us very unglued. And then we can't get our priorities right. We can't remember, oh yeah, this is about spirituality. This is, you know, because also, and also it doesn't help. The media doesn't help with all of the commercials about the bigger, the better, buy this, buy that. You know, the irony that, you know, Black Friday, which is all about spending, is the day after the gratitude day. It's just funny. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I'm so grateful for my wife. Oh my God, now I'm going to stand in line to get the big television. It's sort of, I don't know, I find that interesting.
It's a really good point.
Yeah, it's so difficult not to be materialistic. And I know that I love going shopping as much as the next person, but sometimes after I've been shopping, I feel kind of guilty because, you know, did I really need that? No, I wanted it. Wanted it. And, you know, I didn't need it. I didn't need to spend that money. Am I becoming materialistic? Well, I try not to be.
I think we need to be careful though, because I think we can also get very judgmental of ourselves. You know, it's okay to take pleasure in the material. I think it just, the question is that where my meaning is coming from? You know, I used to think that if I was to be a spiritual person, I would wear beige all the time. I wouldn't wear lipstick. I wouldn't like things, you know, like if I was truly evolved, I'd be beyond that stuff. And because I think we can find anything to feel bad about, right? And now I realize it's okay to take pleasure in good design, right? The question is that where my meaning and purpose is coming from? And ultimately, for me, objects can't make you happy.
So when you have people coming around to your house, I do this a lot, and of course, in the holidays, you have more and more family and people. So yes, there's that whole competition aspect. Certainly when my mother comes
around. Oh, well, that's
around,
a whole nother.
And I've laid the table because she's like Martha Stewart number two. And I want to have my table laid beautifully so that I can get a compliment from her. And sometimes when she doesn't give me
one. You can't get apple juice out of an orange, no matter how hard you squeeze.
But when I do get a compliment, darn, I've done it. So I try really hard to make that table. Not because, because I want to impress my mother-in-law. What is it when people come into my house, I've got a lovely house, but, you know, we're not a posh family. We have things that we like that mean a lot to us. But sometimes I find myself apologizing to people. Oh, sorry, it's a little messy there, or it's this. Right. You know, why do we have to do that?
So I find this fascinating.
What does that sound like?
Does that sound like?
Who might have a second set of furniture in her basement?
Oh, you.
Before,
Paula, before you
get it, that's how
Holly and I met. Mm-hmm. Was for those listeners who don't know how we met because Holly was an It's Mule the Dog alumni. She was on one of my shows with her husband and her dogs. And one of the crazy things when I don't think it's that crazy. Observation day was to watch this weird woman taking all of the chewed up furniture and her rug down into the basement and exchanging for exactly the same type of furniture that hadn't been chewed for when people came. And then when those people left, then she would take the good furniture and swap it for the chewed stuff.
I thought it was very ingenious.
And you're such a problem solver. It's fascinating. But see, this cleaning up thing. So a few years ago, I made this commitment, which of course I've broken now several times, which was I am not going to clean up my house excessively before people come over because I want to stop the madness. Everyone thinks that everyone lives neat except for themselves, right? Because what happens is everyone cleans up before you come over. And so it's perpetuating this myth, right? It's just not a good idea because you just get crazy. I mean, I still do it. Like, oh my God, somehow that pile of papers means I'm a bad person. I'm not sure how I made that, you know, kind of.
But people
connection.
Will come into your home if it's a little messy and go, oh, she's messy.
And so what? So let's take it. This is a therapist. This is one of my approaches. Okay. Let's take it to the, okay. So what? What if they say that?
Well, I don't know. I don't want them thinking that.
Why? Why do you care? What others think of you? One of my favorite things, what others think of you is none of your business. I heard
that
once.
That's true. That's true when you put it like that. But then you know that so and so comes in here and takes a look at maybe that Victoria Stillwell could be a little messy.
Why are you hanging out with so and so?
Is going to go and tell so and so my daughter's mother's whatever friends are all going to get together. Oh, her house. Oh, she's
so.
I don't know.
What
it bothers
you?
Me.
I know. It bothers me as well. Not your house. But
I don't. Why should it bother? Why should it bother me?
Because we focus so much. And also we equate neatness with worthiness as a human being, I
think. Isn't it the cleanliness is close to godliness? Isn't that the same?
There's a lot of atheists out there.
Does that mean, Mo, because my husband is probably the messiest person on the planet?
Next to my husband.
Isn't it curious? I don't want to do a whole like couples therapy thing here situation,
please do.
But he's the messiest and his mother's Martha Stewart too. Isn't that interesting?
His mother hoards stuff too.
Oh, that would
and
be a
she,
good topic.
She has her messy room. Everything else in the house is all right, but you open a drawer or you open the fridge, stuff falls out
so
on you.
So here's this whole psychological thing.
See, okay. I can even do that one.
And I'm sorry. If you're really bored about this, I do apologize, but I think this is fascinating.
No, but every single person, though, I think this is a universal issue.
Okay.
Because if it's not you, it's your spouse or your somebody you know.
Okay, so tell us why.
But I think it's, I mean, I've often said that the way your living room looks is the way you present yourself to the world, but it's the your bedroom and other rooms or how what's really going on inside. I can tell what's going on with me emotionally, not because I'm so connected to myself, even though I probably should be, given that this is what I do for a living. Anyway, I can tell by what's going on with my laundry situation. Like, that gives me a lot of insight about what's going on psychologically. You know what I mean? And so I feel like it's this idea too, like, if you're not going to let someone into your home until it's perfect, think about what that means. I'm not going to let you into me, who I am, unless I'm perfect. To me, they're very similar. Like, thinking that somehow we're too messy to let people in to our lives. Well, good luck. How long are you going to wait till you're perfect? It's just not going to happen. But you know what I mean? Like, I feel like it makes me sad when, and I know I'm guilty of it, when it's so nice to have people at your home, to not invite someone over because it doesn't look as neat as you want, to miss the opportunity to connect, to spend time with people. Now, what I've also learned is the people I'm hanging out with, even if in their head they're judging, they really don't care.
They don't. Exactly.
They really don't care.
That's why when Holly and Sean come over, I don't care if it's a mess.
Yeah.
Because I know they're not going to judge.
But here's the issue, though, and I'm the total opposite, which is weird, is that my house, you know, I say, oh, it's always got, you know,
it's perfect.
I don't do well with mess or clutter or anything.
You have to know that about
yourself. This drives my husband crazy. He puts down a Diet Coke and I come back under there with a coaster. He puts something, you know, where it's not supposed to be, and immediately, and you know, he puts a spoon in the sink and then he's like, what happened to my spoon? I was like, it was in the sink. I put it in the dishwasher. He's like, I wasn't done with it. Oh, like, and it's like, I am over the edge and I'm this neurotic. But, so it would be, you know what I mean?
Well, I think, but part of it is that people have just individual differences with what they can tolerate. It's not a judgment thing. There are people, for example, who just think about people who prefer it to be a little hotter, people who prefer it to be a little colder, people who prefer louder noises, people who don't. I think sometimes it's just an issue of preferences and an issue of, you know, what kind of, environment makes you feel more comfortable. I like things neater.
But see, here's what's funny. I am more comfortable and enjoy it when I'm in someone's house that's well lived in and messier or whatever. Like, it doesn't matter. My next door neighbor has two kids who are out of control and her house is always chaos, and I'm very comfortable there.
Because it's not your house.
Exactly. You get to go home to your place.
Because I certainly have that. I like to have a clean house. I don't like the mess. It clutters my brain. I feel great when everything is just so, where everything is in
its
place.
That's probably what's me.
It's very difficult, though, to have it when you have a child and also when you have a husband that, for example, when he comes to bed at night, he literally takes off his clothes and then they stay where he stepped out of them.
Oh, I got a good trick for that, to fixing that. I did that with my husband when I got married. Someone's mom told me to do this and it worked. Every time there was a piece of clothing on the floor, you pick it up and you put it in a garbage bag. You put that garbage bag away and eventually everything disappears. And when they say, where's my underwear? Well, it took Sean a couple times to buy new underwear when he couldn't find his underwear. And after buying a couple packs, he's like, hang on a second. And I was like, I don't know. He said, what happened to all my, you know? I said, well, I don't know. Check the giveaway pile. Giveaway pile? And I said, well, it was on the floor. Clearly you didn't want it. So I thought it was giveaway. So I was about to give it to Salvation Army.
Let me play devil's advocate here. You know how, like, when people...
You don't think my house is cold and sterile, though, when you come in?
I don't know. I don't think
I'm ultra sterile.
Okay, I just think it's really...
It is
perfect. Now I'm getting...
I wouldn't say sterile. I would say that it's... I mean, and the thing is, here's the thing. You, as a human being, are so informal. You know what I mean? Like, you are the most casual, informal, like... can hang out at the diviest place or at the opera. We went to see Carmen. Holly and I, it was amazing. You are so, you know what I mean?
Like,
you're so casual and laid back and non-judgmental in many ways, you know? So I find it so interesting that you need to have, or you feel like your house has to look a certain way, but I don't think you're doing it out of image. Like, maybe me and Victoria are more worried about what people are thinking of us. I think it's just your own preference, right?
So in other words, I'm crazy on the inside.
I wouldn't
say that.
Am I
free to the
rich? No. I think you're really healthy.
Yeah. Let's go into something else now. I
think people are probably waiting for an Ask Victoria,
but,
do you think?
Yes, I think. But you know what? It goes to dogs, and I think a lot of it, too, bringing it full circle to we are. And I find myself doing this, too, with my dogs, is you want the same thing with children. You want them to be perfect, just like your house, whatever. So I know that when, you know, everybody's fine and, you know, Barnsley's fine and, you know, I'm just watching them like a hawk, or like Cashmere watching her like a hawk, and I'm like, oh, yeah, come on. And then she'll, like, lick somebody. I'm like, she normally doesn't do that.
Which is BS, because she does it all the time.
I know, right? You were supposed to forget
that. When I walked into Victoria's house, you know, like.
Oh, Sadie's right there. Sadie's right. She body blocks everybody at the door. She carries them a toy and she's so excited to see them. And she, you know, she's right there. And then there's my little chihuahua barking.
Anyway, all right. So, yes, now that we've come full circle, we can go to Ask Victoria. And you might have some answers, Paula, for some of these questions from a psychological standpoint.
Okay.
Hey, you got something on your mind?
What, are you a wizard, a genius?
How do they make a miniature? I mean, is there some way, some process they physically miniaturize the dog? Or is it a puppy? Or what the devil is going on?
That's a really good question.
I've got my work cut out for me here.
Next time you want to know something,
can you repeat the question?
Why don't you ask Victoria? She's the expert with this kind of stuff, you know.
You obviously don't know my dog.
Just ask Victoria.
All right, ask Victoria this question from Anne in Everton, England. Where is Everton?
Do you know what? I don't know. Sydney near, yeah, isn't it Liverpool?
You're asking me?
No, it was a rhetorical question.
It is near Liverpool.
Okay.
Anne from Everton, England, near Liverpool, wants to know, she says, my dog Bernie is a 14-month-old lab and was born blind in one eye and partially sighted in the other. Recently, his eyesight has gotten worse and he started to bark at people and he doesn't get along with other dogs except for our two other dogs. Could this be lack of confidence because of the poor eyesight, or is he being protective as I think I may mother him too much? Training tips for blind dogs would be greatly appreciated.
Poor thing. Hmm. Yeah, I do think the fact that he's barking at other dogs means that he's unconfident. And working with blind dogs or dogs that are going blind, you know, if you try and see how, or maybe try and have a little bit more understanding of how they might be perceiving the world, that it's a scary world out there, that they are potentially seeing just shapes or seeing nothing at all or seeing very badly, even in twilight when dogs historically see the best. And so if your dog is blind especially, I always make it as easy as possible for them in a house. So, for example, because dogs still retain their amazing senses, so their amazing sense of smell, when they do go blind, it's often easier for a dog than it would be for a human, say, because a dog really perceives a lot of the world through their nose. So I use that to help make their life easier, certainly within the home. And sometimes you can delineate room to room by putting a different kind of scent. Let's say sometimes people use scented candles. I think sometimes scented candles are a bit much because then it's really sensory overload.
Potpourri or something.
A little bit. You know, you can delineate each room by having a different scent in each room so that the dog knows where it is. But also you can pay special attention to what's underneath the dog's paw. So, for example, if you've got a step, like in my kitchen into my family room, there's a step. And so for a blind dog, if Sadie ever went blind, what I would do there is that I would teach her, I would put a mat or something different under her feet, a different
texture
underneath her foot, underneath her feet, so that when she got to the step, she realized that it was a step down. Things like that. And don't move furniture around.
Of course not, yeah.
So that your dog can really begin to negotiate. Your dog already knows the house and can feel comfortable and confident when in the house. Outside, I think that the confidence needs to come from you. And sometimes walking the dog who is going blind or walking the blind dog by his or herself is important without the other dogs with them, because then you can go through coping rituals. Let's say the dog senses another dog coming close to them and lunges. Well, you can teach a dog, instead of lunging, to do something else, to do another activity, play with a toy, eat something, sit or lie down or walk the other way, or just do a different activity. So then that becomes a ritual of behavior that's established each time the dog senses something's coming close. And that's much easier to teach the dog when it's by itself rather than when you have other dogs with it. And then when the dog is confident by itself, then you can begin to add the other dogs back in. If things regress, you take the other dogs out of the picture again and sort of go back to what the training you were doing before. And it literally is, it's just introducing the dog that, you know, I'm here, I'm protecting you, so you don't have to be defensive of yourself or protecting me in any kind of way. And I think it's natural, and Paula, help me here, I think it's natural, certainly, if your animal has some kind of impairment or disability, or your animal's old or ill, that definitely that mothering instinct comes out, doesn't it?
Right. I would think the mothering instinct comes out, and the sort of people might get looser with the rules. And so when the person who asked the question, I forgot, what was her name? I'm sorry.
Anne
asked the question. She said, she already knows the answer. Maybe I've played a role, right, in kind of babying the dog a little bit. Because I do think that we kind of, we know that animals like to have, like human beings, boundaries and limits, loving, compassionate, but boundaries and limits. And I'm wondering if we let them get away with things potentially because, oh, I feel so bad, the dog's losing, that they're going to feel a little less safe because they don't feel...
You're keeping a strong rein.
Right. Boundary and safety, I would think. And also, I would think, I mean, we're so connected to our animals, it must just be so profoundly painful for Anne to see her dog struggling. And then when it's painful for you and you're feeling bad and not feeling, you know, positive. And I mean, our dogs, aren't they so sensitive to what we're feeling?
Yeah, they do. They pick it up very easily. And I think there is when you do take charge, in a sort of in a firm and compassionate way.
Right.
So even if you're feeling a little uneasy yourself, you show your dog, you know, this is what we're going to do in this situation, and I'm going to guide you.
Right. And I got your back. You're okay. You feel safe. You know, I want you to feel safe. I'm here. I would imagine, you know, I'm not a dog trainer, but I would imagine that because if they're not seeing you, being more maybe, you know, being affectionate with your dogs and just really letting them know that you're present with your voice, with whatever it might be.
Yeah. And also, if you're nervous, the dog's going to smell it on you. You know, we do emit all kinds of smells in different emotional states when we're feeling differently. So the dog picks those up and senses those very easily.
Mm-hmm. Does an animal, let me ask you, Victoria, does a dog, when they become blind, does their inherent personality change in any way?
Sometimes they do. Sometimes they really can become a lot more defensive of themselves because they have to protect themselves. They can no longer see, and that's scary.
Right.
So then they will become a little bit more aggressive, reactive, and that happens all the time.
Right.
And that's when you have to step in and say, hey, you don't need to be like that because I do have your back. I think I'm sure it's the same with people, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness. I was actually just thinking about a lot of times when people start losing their hearing. I worked a lot with people who are older, and I remember seeing some people who seemed to get a little more paranoid because they couldn't hear, so they thought maybe someone was talking about them, or, you know, they missed cues, and often people don't want to admit that they're losing their hearing, and so they pretend that they're not, but they're missing information and gaping holes. Right? Because, you know, it's really hard as you're aging to kind of admit that you're getting older. And so go ahead, Holly.
No, I was just going to say, I think you're right. And I had my border collie, Bonnie, I don't think you knew her, was previous to, I mean, she was having seizures and lost her eyesight. Mm. And I had two other dogs, Cashmere and Barnsley, at the same time. And one thing may be an issue with Anne is that she's got two other dogs. I don't know how they play or what they do or if they're interactive. I know Bonnie was older than Barnsley and Cashmere. They played a lot, and oftentimes, you know, they'd all be in the same room together, but Barnsley and Cashmere would get a little out of control and knock her over or get too close, and when they would play, they would growl and it would scare her. So it also could, too, even though she gets along with the other dogs, it could be a little unsettling and scary. So what I learned to do was separate her bed from the other two beds so that she was out of their way when they started wrestling or playing or, you know, doing whatever. And I was always making sure that she was next to me when they were playing to stay out of the line of fire. So that may be a part of it too, that dog gets a little, you know, not accidentally knocked around. They're not, you know what I mean?
Right.
But the other two dogs aren't as aware as we are that this dog is blind.
I think whenever you have a lot of dogs in a household, when you have a multi-dog household, that you've got to ensure that every dog has their own space during the day sometimes, so they at least have their own space away from each other. I mean, they'll do that themselves. They'll take themselves away to their beds, for example. But also that you have a bit of one-on-one time with each dog by themselves. And I think that's really healthy for them.
A multi-child household. Mm. Being able to really make sure that you spend time with each of your kids one-on-one. There's something very powerful about that. So animals, children,
Do you have to be careful? I know this is sort of like an off branch of it, but, you know, as we do mother a dog that has special needs, this dog who's blind or a dog going blind, do the other dogs sense that? And there could there be jealousy among them like children?
I don't think there's jealousy. I think there certainly could be a change of behavior towards the other dog because they realize the other dog is weaker. Mm-hmm. That there's a weakness there. And unfortunately, in the canine world, that means he can be picked on. And so definitely
kind of like bullying with kids.
Exactly. Yeah. Definitely when you see an elderly dog, for example, you know, the other dogs can take advantage of that. Or a dog that is sick. Same thing.
But does it also happen, though, like when somebody brings a new baby into a home and you've got a dog, you know, as far as jealousy or is that kind of what you were asking? If you start spending a lot of time, Holly, with one of your dogs because it has more, you know, you have to give it medication several times a day and you have to do all this. Will there be any kind of negative impact as far as how that dog will perceive you in your relationship?
I think they can. And I do have a lot of people say dogs can't, they don't have the ability to feel jealous. Well, I've written in my book, that's my new book, answering that question. Do dogs have that capability of feeling jealous? And I believe they do. And there's been quite a few studies on this, but a good friend of mine, Dr. Nicholas Dodman at Tufts University, has done quite a few studies on this. But basically he said, in his very non-scientific way, if it walks like a duck, quacks like a duck and looks like a duck, it probably is a duck. So if the dog is trying to interrupt you as you're giving attention to the other dog, or if the dog is barking at you or demanding attention or getting upset and aggressive to the other dog when you're giving attention, chances are that, yes, that dog is jealous. That dog is upset that you're giving the other dog attention and your dog wants it for himself. Because what is jealousy? It's that you are, you become anxious, you're worried that somebody that is important to you is being taken away, or their attention is being taken away from you, that you're losing that person. And so,
right.
Or that person has something that you don't have.
It's fear. I mean, jealousy,
yes.
Really, underneath jealousy,
yes, you're right.
The primary emotion is fear.
So, therefore, I really think that dogs do feel jealousy. Now, whether they feel guilt, well, that's a different
thing.
What
about that whole thing when people say, oh, it looks down, won't make eye contact with you after they do something? No,
that's
Victoria?
Really that in response. Behavior? That's really, yeah, learned behavior. It's really in response to your body language.
So then we project guilt onto them.
I don't know if I saw this on a Facebook page, Twitter, or somebody, but somebody said, I think it was on my feed in Facebook, and said, my dog just ate my $200 shoes and put herself in a timeout. And it was a picture of the dog sitting in the corner with her face in the corner. And I don't know whether that was really the story, but that was one of the funny things I've ever seen. But you're right, like, you see the dog, like, that'll look at you and they look down, they look away, they know they've done something wrong.
Well, in order to feel guilt, you have to have a really innate sense of self. You have to be aware of how your behavior affects others.
Right.
Isn't that right?
Right, yeah.
And that sort of heightened awareness, we don't think as of yet that dogs have the capacity to feel, to be self-aware.
Self-aware?
They're not self-aware. They are self-aware, sorry. They're aware of their own presence in the world, but are they aware or concerned of how their behavior is affecting
impact.
You
okay.
or others?
Okay, but let me ask you
yeah.
this. So one of the things that, the reason that you came to us and we did it Smear the Dog is my dog Cashmere was escaping out of our yard. And so she would come back, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes later, she always came back. And she would come back, or if we, you know, saw her in Cashmere, get back here, and she would come back, you know, come on. But I knew from you not to ever punish them when they return, because you don't want them to associate coming back with bad things. But I would say, you know, come on, and I would get her inside the yard, and immediately she would drop her head, and she would walk inside, and she would, like, make herself scarce, as if she knew.
Because she remembers. Even though you changed your behavior, she still remembers from previous excursions your reaction, which is a normal reaction. So she still remembers that. It becomes almost a habit of behavior. It's a predictable, I'm going to behave, I always behave in the same way in this particular situation. It's almost like a trigger.
Oh,
right.
Do you know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yep,
right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Okay. All right. Here's another question from Catherine in Essex Junction, Vermont. Can I start that over? Catherine in Essex Junction, Vermont. I have been there. It's in Vermont. Dear Victoria, please help. We recently adopted a second dog, a 3-year-old 20-pound beagle mix named Buddy. My husband and I are having major troubles training him. His nose is his guild. Guild?
His nose is his what?
Guild. G-U-I-L-D.
Guide. And
I guess maybe she meant to say guide. And if
correct.
There is a scent that catches his attention, he becomes deaf and blind to any of our commands. My husband's patience is running out, and I need help advice if I'm going to be able to keep this dog in my marriage intact. So, yeah. I mean, I think that you can boil that down to a small issue, because it's the same kind of thing. Even when my dogs are outside and they're in a fenced in area, and I say, you know, come on, time to come in, and they're smelling something or doing something, it's like selective hearing. It's like when the Falcons are on and I ask my husband if he can help me move a dresser, he doesn't hear me. And then they come in when they want to.
That you have a hound,
yeah,
and this dog is a beagle mix, and beagles really think with their noses. I mean, a lot of dog breeds think with their noses, but beagles especially. And I always say, when you have a beagle, you've got to understand that the nose is its world.
Mm.
So how can you become more motivating than that scent that the dog has picked up? And what is at the end of that scent, that thrill that drives the dog to want to discover what is at the end of that scent, is much more thrilling than coming back to you. It's really hard. So first of all, until the dog has got a good recall, you never allow it to go out without a leash or a long line on it. You can have an extendable leash, you can have a long line, but you just never allow it to practice not listening to you, because when it practices that behavior, it just reinforces it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then when you are in your backyard, you've started in your home, you go to your backyard. When it's good in the backyard, you know, you can go to a training class where there's more distractions. You really set up a good recall. And that means you make coming back to you the best thing the dog could ever do. And you do that in a quiet environment first with no distractions, and then you gradually build it up where there are more in environments where there are more distractions. And a training class is a really good one to do, because there are other dogs around there. There are lots of scents, there's lots of smells. And then you can have other people sort of throwing whatever your dog loves around him, but your dog's got to ignore it and come right back to you. That's sort of recall, an A-plus recall. But it takes a while to get to that point. And that's all great. But then you get outside. And then your dog gets a scent of what really motivates it. So sometimes, even when you've done all of the teaching in the world, it's really hard for the dog to come back to you. Now, in here she's written command, and I know we're used to using those words, obedience and commands, but I don't like using those words anymore. I like to use compliance rather than obedience. I like to use the word cues rather than commands, because if you command your dog to come back to you, what is in it for the dog? Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to cue it. I want to teach that recall as a cue that's the most awesome thing that could ever happen to that dog ever, 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 whenever it comes back to me. And that depends on dog to dog. Is it food? Is it toys? Is it a game? I mean, my gosh, I've done things where I've had real rabbit fur for dogs that are really prey driven. And that is the toy that it'll get when it comes back to me. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard. But of course, here's this poor woman trying to train her dog, teach her dog, when and because she's worried now about what her husband's going to be saying, because he's losing it. I wonder if he, because I go into so many homes, Paula.
Oh, my goodness.
Where the poor woman is trying to do their best, or sometimes the poor man is trying to do his best. And the other half is just complaining, but not doing anything about it.
Right.
don't think that it's that, okay, she got the dog, I'm not going to help teach it, but I want the dog to behave.
Right.
And I go in there and say, but you've got to become part of that teaching process.
Right. Because it was what you were saying to, first of all, I was just thinking that, to me, the whole moral of the story for you, Holly, is you don't ever want to go ask him to move furniture because you don't want it to be reinforced, right. You know, like while he's watching a game.
Right.
But no, it's so true. And I would imagine, I mean, it's very difficult because every time that dog let's say in this case, a husband isn't setting the boundary, it's reinforcing the dog's behavior that you don't want. And so it's just like parenting, right? I mean, you're giving mixed messages. It's very confusing. And I think a lot of times people want the end result, but they don't want to do the work for it. It's very difficult. I mean, I've seen It's Me or the Dog, and I think, wow, Victoria is one of the best couples therapists I've ever seen. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And I think that using these, this is why I love so much the positive approaches that you use, because to me that spills over into how we train each other. I mean, we train each other as spouses all the time. That's what we do. You know, oh, my wife likes this. I'm going to do that again. Right. And so using those same positive approaches that you teach with our animals and using that as a positive way. I mean, you don't want to command your husband to do something, but maybe cueing him. Right. And same kind of thing. It's so empowering. Right. The dog's making a decision instead of you're making it make a decision.
And that, well, you just hit the nail on the head, because for so long we put the emphasis of training has been about dominating your dog into submission, imposing your will upon a dog. And really, all of that just doesn't allow a dog to think for themselves. But when a dog thinks of themselves and makes choices and solves problems, and they're very good at doing that, mm-hmm. you suddenly find a change in your dog, that mm-hmm. your dog suddenly goes, okay, this is fun. I get it. This is highly reinforcing. And it's interesting what you said about Holly, you know, don't ask Sean to move furniture when he's watching the Falcons, because you're setting him up for failure. Mm-hmm. You are not going to be successful. And that's what I say to people. Don't call your dog back to you when your dog is in the middle of the most awesome game playing with other dogs. Because he's just going to ignore you. Wait till there's a lull in the action and then call your dog to you. It's all about people don't understand how much they reinforce their dog's negative behavior.
Right. 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 No, it is. And again, it's the setting up for failure. I think we do it with our animals. We do it with our relationships. We do it with ourselves. You know, we do it. We set ourselves up. And I think timing, it seems to me like such a critical thing. You know, we're talking about the moving the furniture during a game, intervening when your dog is having a good time and you're like, come on, let's go. I think that's that dominance mentality. Like what? Immediately what I want this moment. Even if it's completely incompatible with what you're doing in the moment, I don't know. I don't want to move through the world with that attitude that somehow everybody's supposed to be submissive to me. I don't want to move.
Oh, there's lot of people that do. And that's why, Paula, it's so fabulous having you here, because we have so much to talk about with regards to that. You know, the battle still rages on. And we'd love to have you back in the new year on a more, I would say, a lot more than you've been here before.
Thank you.
Because there are so many parallels, of course, between human and animal behavior, but also how we treat ourselves, how we treat our animals. And I think there's so much that we can learn because you're a clinical psychologist. I really appreciate the compliment you gave me going into homes and couples therapy, as it were. And I'm thrown into the fire because my expertise is with animals. But as a trainer, as soon as I became a trainer and I started to become professional and go out and into the world, I soon realized very, very quickly that this was going to be more about having people tell me their problems than actually teaching the dogs.
Or watching their problems, seeing it.
Yes.
You see what happens when you walk
in. And then having to deal with those problems first before I was able to deal with the dogs. And so the two are so interrelated that, I mean, I would like, and we've heard from a lot of people that are listening to this podcast, that they'd also like to be able to kind of delve deeper into that world.
Totally. Because really, one of my favorite things that I've heard is that the way we do anything is the way we do everything. And it's all very much connected. The energy you put out, whether it's with your animal, whether it's with your neighbor, whether it's at the grocery store, it comes back to you. So the way you do anything is the way you do everything. Let's be more positive.
I like that. The only wisdom I ever got was there's no audience like no audience. That one's a lot better.
That was fantastic.
Thank you, Paula Bloom.
Thank you so
much
for coming.
Why does he do that? Why does she do that? And that's why people need to buy your book, because you're so insightful and you're smart and you know everything. So we can't wait to see you back in the new year. Have a great holiday.
Oh, yeah, I'm excited.
Happy Hanukkah.
Thank you very much.
Happy New Year.
Thank you very
much. Are you making any resolutions?
So I was reminded of the resolution I need to be making. I make it almost every year. And I was just realized it when we just did that whole Ask Victoria, which is to be better with people's names. You know, I was like, what's that person's name again? What's that person's name again? And, you know, somebody was saying that, you know, it's kind of a cap out. People are like, oh, I'm just not good with names. And I say that all the time. And I realized, you know what? Names matter. Names are important. So I'm really going to try again this year to make the resolution. Well, I'd actually like to actually accomplish it, not just make the resolution. Because usually I say that this year I'm going to give up smoking. And it's easy because I'm not a smoker. So it's like a setup for success every year. Oh, yeah, this year I'm going to stop smoking. It's really great because then I always accomplish it. But no, I want to be better with names. I think names are important. And there's no reason that I shouldn't focus on that. So any suggestions people want to give? I've heard say the name three different times in the conversation. Hi, Victoria. How are you? Yes. Hi, Victoria. But I find that a little irritating.
You know what I do? And I'm bad with it too, but I come up with something and I kind of think of something that relates to me. So Anne, so I would think Anne, and then I would go Anne, and then I would say, oh, Anne, she was the one that got head chopped off, Henry VIII.
Are you kidding? I just thought, exactly, no, Anne of Cleves.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Anne Boleyn.
Anne Boleyn.
Thinking of Anne of Cleves.
Right. And I was thinking Anne Boleyn. But see, that's why we're such good friends.
That is why we're such, that is weird.
But that's if I can relate to that, because then I go back and I think, what was I thinking of when I was trying to remember her name? And that's sometimes easier to think of the situation. So someone said to me, hi, you know, my name is Michael. And I would go, oh, that movie with John Travolta, Michael, was terrible. Then all of a sudden I think, you know, when I'm trying to remember their name, I think to myself, because I laugh, oh, wait, John Travolta and Michael.
Yeah, I need to work
on
that. Because, you know, it feels really good when someone remembers your name. You know, it feels like, so, I mean, I need to do the same thing. So that's my resolution.
I'm the same. And you know what? I would love to discuss in January, if you could come back for one of the first podcasts that we have in January, because I want to discuss, A, why people make resolutions, and what is it about January that sort of, yes, it's the start of a new year, but... You know, why is it the most depressing month for a lot of people? And January and February.
Not for me. It's my birthday in January.
I know it's
a good month.
It's about the only person. But, you know, why and how can we get through it? And, you know, how can we use our animals to
There's a lot of really good specific tips. And there's a lot of research about motivation and making changes. So, there's a lot we can go into.
Well, then, we look forward to going into it with you, Paula. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to Victoria Stilwell's Positively Podcast. For more information, visit positively.com. Get connected on Facebook as Victoria Stilwell or follow her on Twitter at It's Me or the Dog. This Positively Podcast has been brought to you by Pets Ad Life, who encourage you to get a pound for your pet. Visit petsadlife.org or the Pets Ad Life Facebook page to learn more. Be sure to tune in next time as Victoria helps to change dogs' lives. Positively.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.